Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, Evan Barnard, Ann Sawaski. Talking about the world of money and investing, paulwinkler.com is the website. And, you know, there's a lot of people talking about markets and bear markets and you know, what's going on. You know, and markets are a funny thing. You can go long periods of time without returns,
yep,
and then all of a sudden you'll have, you know, huge jumps in markets. You had, of course, the dead decade for large U.S. stocks, and people basically said, that's it. It's no good. It's been an entire decade, 12 years actually, where there was no return in large U.S. stocks.
Right.
And then over the next 10 years, wham, I mean, big time,
yeah,
jump in value. And anybody that wasn't there really missed out. And it was big, big moves in a very rapid fashion.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things that you just never know with markets, but bear markets and, you know, down markets can really kind of freak you out. It's just really kind of, and the thing that it does in my mind is quite often it washes out people that are not real investors. It washes out people that are more speculators than anything. And, you know, especially long bear markets, long down markets.
Yes. Yes. You know,
because people can be really disciplined for a while.
We can hang tough for a month, or 2 months.
Or 2 years, or three years. Or, you know, if you think about it, you had to hang tough for over 12 years with the S&P 500. And back at that point in time, you know, the funds that were really dominated by those large U.S. stocks, I remember, like it's yesterday, I remember 2009, 2010, and 11, you know, 12, 2000 up to 2012, really, is really what it was. And I remember investors going just that, I don't want anything to do with it. Now, the same exact thing happened when I entered this business, though. You know, when I entered this business in the... It was late 80s.
Yeah.
Early 90s. It's late 80s, really, because that's when I really got my securities licenses and started working in that particular arena. And I had all these people that just gathered around me. Hey, Paul, congratulations. You got your, you know, because I started the Series 6, then I got the Series 63, and I got the Series 7. And I started collecting these various, licenses to sell securities and then collecting my financial planning degrees as well. And I remember the older guys coming up and going, hey, Paul, congratulations, man. Welcome to the team. And hey, by the way, don't mess with U.S. stocks at all. Just put your clients all in the international because, you know, the reality of it is you got, and that was two decades.
Yeah.
Those of you, you know, are just wondering, it was international trouncing U.S. stocks for 20 years. 20 years. And nobody wanted a U.S. stock to save their lives. It just wasn't worth messing with. And then, you know, lo and behold, then you have the 90s. And man, it took off. Large U.S. stock, you know, just absolutely took off during that decade and left international in the dust. And then that time, it was only one decade of absolute dominance of U.S. versus international.
Yeah.
Because then international dominated U.S. over the next, you know, 10, 11 years. And then you had U.S. And it's just, you don't know.
Oh, exactly.
And in a big part of it is the differential between the U.S. dollar versus other currencies. It's just stuff that there's so many different factors. It's just not economics. But, you know, you look at it now and I look at U.S. Markets and what they're selling for compared to international. And I'm like, at some point, I'm figuring You know, the international is going to be the huge, huge winner, and you just don't know when it is. But there was an article in MarketWatch. Stock investors are still in danger, quote unquote. And you don't know. There's always danger. You know, with stock markets, there's always volatility. That's why risk is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of it is there is no return without risk taken. And risk may be you could go for a while with no return, then all of a sudden you... Because when you hear me say, hey, historically, large U.S. stocks have doubled in value about every 7 years, after inflation every 10 years, that's just average. I mean, you look back at the period of the 1970s, late 1970s, early 1980s, and it's interesting because I actually looked at P.E. ratios. Because there are some people that will tell you, hey, but yeah, but back then, U.S. stocks were really quote-unquote undervalued compared to right now. And if you look at the numbers, the P.E. ratio, now, so if you don't know what a P.E. ratio is, let me back up and explain this to you. What we look at, one of the ratios we look at when valuing stocks is what price they're selling for every dollar of earnings. So historically, large U.S. stocks sell for 16 times earnings. So if I take that number and I say, hey, how many years of earnings would it take for me to get back my purchasing price? It's 16 years, right? Okay, so you think about it that way. Another way you think about it, it would be if I turn that ratio over, 1 divided by 16 is what's called earnings yield. So 1 divided by 16 is 6.25%. Okay, so if we look at that, we say, okay, so that's the earnings yield of the stock market. And hence we go 6.25% plus growth in earnings, about 3% or so. And we go, oh, 10% return. Okay, so that's where that number comes from. Rule of 72, 72 divided by your interest rate, 10. That's where the 7 years for money to double comes from, okay? Now, if we look at the early 1980s and you look at PE ratios, and literally from 1974 to about 1980, the PE ratio is about 1 to 8, you know, or 8 to 1, I guess PE, except P, I'm using PE, not EP. So it's PE ratio 8 to 1. So you look at that, go, wow, it was really low. So somebody might say, well, yeah, of course the 80s was really phenomenal for large U.S. stocks. It was even, well, way, way better for international, by the way, but I'm just using large U.S. stocks just in order to keep it simple. You say, well, you got a fivefold increase in value in the S&P 500. So instead of it doubling, it went up fivefold, right? So you think about this and go, well, wait a minute. Okay, we had way higher returns, but it wasn't just because prices were so low. Because if prices just went back to historic norms, the 8 to 1 would have gone to 16 to 1 and you're done, right?
Right.
But no, we added actually go fivefold increase in value in the S&P 500. So just, and you know, eightfold increase in value in the Europe, Australia, Far East, and 11-fold increase with small international stocks over that same period of time. 11-fold. And just who'd have thunk? You know, you don't know, especially coming out of the 1970s, Carter years, oil, you know, all the garbage that was going on. And all the war and all of the unrest.
High inflation, though.
Yeah, we had high inflation. Yeah. You had a lot of unrest, political unrest. Right. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of military unrest. You had a lot of, you know, hostage situations and a lot of kind of bad stuff going on. And during that period of bad time, it still did that. So, you know, I think that really patience is something that you don't see with investors very often. Mm-hmm. It's very hard.
Yeah, for sure. Funny you talk about investors not being patient.
Okay.
This is, I think this is out of Bloomberg. Retail traders who drove the meme frenzy bail out in bear market.
Okay, there you go. Case in point.
Stock traders who whipped up the meme craze that took Wall Street by storm last year are furiously rushing to the exits.
Mm.
This one caught my eye. Mm. Roughly 50%, 50%. Of single stock retail positions in the NASDAQ 100 and a quarter of those in the S&P 500 that have been accumulated since January 2019 have been sold.
Wow.
50% of the positions have been liquidated if you were in a NASDAQ, and 25% up in the S&P of people that started investing single in stock. 2019.
You know, that reminds me of the Kennedy, old Kennedy quote. You know, it was the patriarch Kennedy. in the Depression.
I knew Robert Kennedy. You know,
I knew you're Lincoln. No Robert Kennedy. No.
I don't think that's the one he meant, but yeah.
No. But it was shoeshine guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the quote, and he goes, you know, he comes in and he's talking about the stock market, and he goes, when the shoeshine guy is talking about the stock market, it's time to get out, right? Well, when the shoeshine guy's, you know, getting out of the market, maybe it's time to, you know.
Right.
Maybe it works the other way.
Yeah. Call option volumes have reversed about 70%.
Call option volume.
So people betting the market's going up, that's reversed 70%.
Reversed by 70%.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
And
that's
who do you think are mostly number. Those investors? It's younger.
Yeah.
That's the younger people that were dipping their toe in the water.
Right.
And they're going to get crushed.
Well, it was the older investors, though, remember when COVID happened, that bailed out of the stock market like 30%. Of investors in general. So it's not just younger investors that have a tendency to panic and get out. But, you know, it's I think what's happened is people are more disciplined than they used to be. And it just means that they just wait a little longer before being imprudent and selling out. So, you know, it used to be that they'd get out within a year. Like that,
yeah.
You know, they're only talking about 2 years right there that you, in what you're saying, Evan. Or maybe they used to get out within, you know, 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years. And now it's their discipline. And then 10 years later, then they bail out and then they jump out. It's worst time. And it's just, I like Warren Buffett's statement about stock market investing. I think it's wonderful. I think it ought to be tattooed on your arm. I'm not much on tattoos, right? But this one you might want to tattoo. My favorite holding period is forever. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But don't you think that statistic with a lot of these young people, the meme stock, that's sort of almost the Robin Hood ones that were going in and it was a game
their
app and, you know, I mean, that seems like there's a correlation with it was fun and it was working and it was really great. And now it's.
Well, and I remember vividly, you know, doing this, and I wasn't on the radio at that time, but I was getting ready to go on the radio back in the late 1990s. Mm-hmm. And it was commercial after commercial after commercial. You know, where people talking about stock picking and you know, investment clubs. And what I would do is I'd get invited to investment club meetings all the time. Oh, Paul, you need to come over to investment club. You know, I would talk to somebody and they would get excited because they heard the academic approach to investing for the first time ever. And it would be, I don't know that you want me to come to your investment club. And they'd be like, why? Because I would basically ruin it for you guys. I mean, you're all talking about stock picking and market timing. And I would basically tell you it's nonsense and, you know, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I would go and they would be polite to me. I remember a guy, you know, saying, hey, what about hedge funds, Paul? And I was like, oh, good grief. I can't do this anymore. So I stopped doing speeches at investment clubs.
Yeah.
But it says, this guy says, hey, I have no idea how long bear market on Wall Street will last or how far down the major averages will go. But I do know that it won't help you forecast the bear market severity. Valuation. Bear markets that occur when the stock market is more overvalued do not last longer on average than those that begin when equities are less overvalued.
Yeah,
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, you think about, you know, hey, it's overpriced. And in essence, what that's saying is just because the price is higher than it historically is compared to earnings doesn't mean anything. Because one part of it, when we look at P/E ratios, remember, it's a static number. It is a static number of what the price is compared to either last year's earnings over the earnings over the past year or what we expect in earnings over the next coming year. That would be what we call forward PE, which is I like to look at more than I like to look at rearview mirror PE ratio. But remember, it only looks at what earnings are going to be over the next year when companies will have earnings for decades, if they're around, into the future. You're buying not just next year earnings, you're buying the earnings into until as long as the company lasts. So in essence, it doesn't really surprise me, but it is kind of interesting that when people see that the P/E ratio is higher than historically normal and the market goes down and the P/E ratio is still higher than historically normal, that doesn't mean that the bear market will last longer. As a matter, he says, I measured the correlation between the model's earnings, our readings, and the length and severity of bear markets and came up empty on traditional levels of statistical significance. Moreover, the extent that which correlations did emerge, they were really just the opposite of what you'd expect. Bear markets that began when equities, that's a fancy word for stocks, those of you who don't know, were more overvalued, were shorter on average. Bear markets were shorter, I will repeat, than on average than when you had lower P/E ratios.
And it said, and produced smaller losses.
And had smaller losses.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so they said, thankfully, a bear market is relatively brief. 1.4 years is the average for those in the Ned Davis research calendar. You know, we see data that is 111 days. Okay, so don't confuse that with this, because when you hear me say on average markets recover from downturns in 111 days, what I'm talking about is any downturn. You know, some downturns can be tiny. When we're talking about bear market downturns, we're looking at, you know, 20% declines
right
in the stock market. So on average, it would take longer to recover from one of those, but still, that's not very long, you know, to totally come back. And remember what you've got to have to come back from a 20% downturn. You know, if you look at markets and you say, well, you know, if you have a 20% downturn, what's it? Let me see if I've figured up really quick here. So if I have, let's say,
$8,
it's going to be something like that. And I'll let me see if I can do this right here, right quick. And I go, okay, so if I go down by that much, how long does it take to recover from a market downturn to get back to, oh gosh.
I know 30 is 43.
Yeah, it's oh, I know what it is. I can do it in my head. Doggone, it's 25%.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do my calculator. I'm going, Paul, do this in your head, you fool. Okay. But anyways, so you know, when you have a 20% downturn, it takes 25% to get back to where you were, right? So if you think about it, that's a pretty big move up that you've missed out on if you bailed out of the stock market,
right.
Okay?
Right.
So point being that. So just keep it in mind. It's kind of neat. When you look at that and you go, wow, okay, so market downturns, they really don't last that long. And if stock markets are quote-unquote overvalued, like everybody's been screaming at the top of their lungs, they're typically even shorter periods of time that it takes to get back to even based on history, according to this wonderful article in MarketWatch. Thanks so much, Mark Hulbert. He always comes out with some really good stuff in there. Paul Winkler, Evan Barnard, and Sawaski, be back right after this. Stay tuned. Hey, folks, I want to tell you something I'm really excited about. My new book, Confident Financial Planning, is finally out. It's in paperback, hardcover, Kindle version, and I actually have an audiobook version of it. It talks about building your financial castle. I use that throughout the book, talking about your investments. Your financial plan is kind of like a castle. You have your savings and your emergency funds. I talk about that, debt, good debt, bad debt. I talk about special goal funds and how to set those things up and how to invest for those types of special things that you might want to do in the future. Types of retirement accounts, different types of taxation of investment accounts. Talk about real estate investing and pros and cons of that, how to project retirement assets, and your moat. You know, that's how you protect your castle. It's the risk management aspect of a financial plan. If you want to find out more about that, you go to paulwinkler.com/book to get it. And hope you enjoy. And we are back. This is the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, Ann Sawaski, Evan Barnard, paulwinkler.com is the website. That is where you get the podcast. If you are not a subscriber, shame on you. No, just joking. No, I'm not. No, go ahead. You get a daily, you know, just what the topic was, and you might look at your phone and go, oh, wow, that'd be kind of cool. I'd like that topic. So anyway, Ann.
Well, I just had one more comment on this article. Stock investors are still in danger, but history says bear markets are relatively brief.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was Mark Hulbert. Just one last thing I thought was interesting was he says the pandemic-induced bear markets, consistent with the historic pattern that bear markets in recent decades have been shorter and less severe on average than those in earlier decades of the 20th century, even though valuations have been more stretched. So, you know, why would that be? I mean, obviously the Depression lasted a lot longer.
Okay. Valuations more stretched. So that would tell me growth in earnings would be a bigger factor. You'd have higher growth in earnings would be in that case. One, I think if you look back at history, the Federal Reserve and you look at government actions were less well executed back in the early days, I would think, you know, and it's not I would think, it is actually the truth. You know, you look back to the Depression and the Federal Reserve made every mistake that they possibly could.
Lack of knowledge, I'm sure.
So, you know, you go and pop tariffs on for protectionist reasons back in the 1930s and even into the later decades. You think about price and you know, price freezes, you know, Nixon, the wage and price freezes that he tried to engage in that was ill conceived.
Right.
Another thing that you think about is, you know, when you look at downturns back in the earlier days, companies didn't have as many tools at their disposal to come back from the downturns because of union activity. They didn't have as great of an ability to reduce their expenses. If, let's say, you went through a downturn, you just reduce expenses, you lay off people, but they didn't have that type of flexibility quite as much back in those days. So that would actually lead to a longer downturn in the earlier days than you would see now, where companies have a lot more at their disposal. And the other thing is that it's much more global economy now. So if you have a problem, you switch to another vendor in another country, or you move around and you have the ability to, because with shipping, the issues with shipping back then, you didn't have the ability to change vendors as quickly back then. So now with a level of flexibility, companies can come back from negative consequences of maybe government action or, you know, anything that happens. So I think that would be a big reason for it. That'd be my theory regarding that.
Yeah. And the Fed didn't telegraph things as much back then either. I mean, now you kind of have three or four meetings before the meeting and everyone kind of has their expectation baked in before they even
and maybe,
make announcements.
Maybe you do have better information, but I don't know if that would lead to
and more people in the market.
Yeah.
Faster, I mean, face it, 24-hour markets.
I don't know, though, because you know, if you look at the data on market efficiency, it predates the 1960s, you know, where the markets were pretty doggone efficient back then. Mm-hmm. So they're properly priced, so the movements wouldn't be necessarily any greater because, or maybe that they wouldn't be proper, because the information was well known and people didn't have the ability to outpace markets. So I think that the shorter duration of the market downturns is more probably a function of some of those other things where, you know, it takes a long time to come back from a misstep like a tariff that was ill-timed by the Federal Reserve or, you know, basically reducing monetary supply during an economic downturn. Now at a drop of a hat, they're increasing money supply and the Treasury, like think Tim Geithner coming out and basically saying, hey, we're going to make sure that, you know, you're liquid and you don't have to worry about running on the bank in 2008. You know, that was something that we didn't previously have. You know, the runs on the bank back in the 1930s were terrible.
Well, if you think about bear markets and kind of this, you know, this 20% decline number, we've had three calendar year declines between 20 and 29% since 1926.
Mm-hmm.
We've had three 30% calendar year declines since 26 through 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But over that entire time period, the market still averaged around 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at this 3 out of 4 number that you talk about frequently, whether it's 3 out of 4 months, 3 out of 4 weeks, 3 out of 4 decades.
Markets go up 3 out of 4 versus down 1 out of 4.
In up years, which is 70 years, the market averages 21.2%. In down years.
Oh, that's an interesting piece of data. That's
cool. So in those 70 years that was up in the last 95, the market has averaged little over 21%.
That's an interesting piece of data.
The market is down on average, which was 25 years over that time period, 13%.
Yeah. It's I think Burton Malkiel. Mark, it's like a gambling casino with the odds in your favor.
Yeah.
I'm thinking with him with John Stossel when, you know, Stossel's throwing darts at the stock tables and he's beating the professionals like crazy, and Burton Malkiel's just going, you know, bopping his head like he likes to do. Interesting. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., PWI, an investment advisor registered in the state of Tennessee. PWI does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation. This information is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any securities.